We'll hear argument first this morning in Case 11-681, Harris versus Quinn. Mr. Messenger.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, Illinois is forcing Susan Watts and thousands of other home care providers to pay compulsory fees to the SEIU to petition the state about its Medicaid program that pays for their services to persons with disabilities. In Mrs. Watts' case, her daughter Libby. This violates the First Amendment because the purpose of this mandatory association is inherently expressive, to petition the government for a redress of grievances, otherwise lobbying, and also because this program —
I thought it was to negotiate what's typically negotiated in collective bargaining, that is, wages. Is that not so? Wages and benefits?
The subjects of bargaining here are the reimbursement rates given to the providers, and the state now offers or pays money to the SEIU for a health benefit. But that is petitioning the government with regard to those negotiations.
But how does it differ from the typical bargaining that a union does? It asks for a wage rate, and it asks for various benefits. So are you saying that when it's a public in the public sector, it gets converted into something else?
Yes. When in the public sector, when a group is petitioning the government for money, that is petitioning the government over a public program, here from a Medicaid program. It would be very little different than if the American Medical Association was asking for higher Medicaid rates for doctors or for nurses.
Is your argument dependent on this being sort of a dual employee situation, that it's reimbursement as opposed to policemen, police people, fire people, teachers, other public employees who are directly employed by the state?
That is our position for why Abood is distinguishable on that point, is that here the state is not the common law employer or the sole employer of these providers. It simply pays them for their services, much like a health insurer pays for the services of medical professionals.
But your argument, of course, isn't limited to that. It goes beyond that situation.
Yes, and that the actual bargaining, even on behalf of true employees, is also petitioning and political in nature, and for that reason, Abood should be overruled.
Is there any likelihood that the union that represents these, what do I call them, health care workers, health providers, care providers, is there any likelihood that they would try to bargain for benefits for these workers?
Would the union attempt
to? Yes. Is there any likelihood? Do we know anything about what the likelihood would be for certain subjects to be brought up in the bargaining with the state?
Well, one thing that has happened, this is in the collective bargaining agreement, is the state has agreed to give certain amounts of money to an SEIU health care fund to offer access to health benefits for those providers. So the state is funding the SEIU's health benefit program to that extent.
Did they have that before the union?
No.
Suppose you have a policeman who's dissatisfied with his wages, so he makes an appointment with the commissioner, police commissioner, and he goes in and grouses about his wages. He does this, 10 or 11 times, and the commissioner finally is fed up and he tells his secretary, I don't want to see this man again. Has he violated the Constitution?
No.
He has prevented a petition for a redress of grievances?
No, because in that, with an individual speaking, it's a matter of private or an internal proprietary matter that, under this Court's precedents, don't rise to a matter of public concern. However, if you had an organization petitioning a police district for wages across the board for police officers, then that is a matter of public concern and would violate the
First. I really don't understand that. What if it's 10 policemen who do this? It's still not a matter of public concern. What, does it have to be the whole police force?
The line would be, once you have the collective, it would start to become a matter of public concern. It'd be the public concern.
It seems to me it's always a matter of public concern whether you're going to raise the salaries of policemen, whether it's an individual policeman asking for that or a combination of policemen or a union. It's always a matter of public concern, isn't it?
And if it is, then I submit that it's unconstitutional.
Okay, to not give this guy an appointment the 12th time.
No, this police chief can certainly shut his door, but what it would be unconstitutional is to force.
Well, how can he shut his door if he has a right to petition, constitutional right to petition for the redress of grievances? His grievance is he's not being paid enough.
But in that case, under our public concern test, which goes within the Pickering line, that individual grievance would not rise to a First Amendment petition.
But the same grievance, if the union had presented it, the grievance is the salaries for policemen are not high enough.
But the
he's not asking for just his salary to be raised. He wants salaries of all the cops to be raised.
Well, 2 points. The first is the scale is what differentiates it. So here you have a union petitioning a state for Medicaid rates that are paid for 20,000-some care providers. And so the scale of it is what makes it a matter of public concern or a matter of lobbying.
But what you are objecting to the extent that you're not objecting to the entire system of collective bargaining, you're saying an individual employee can say, I don't feel like supporting a union that makes a certain kind of argument about wages or about benefits. So just to carry on with Justice Scalia's example, the subject matter is the exact same in the two contexts, whether it's an individual employee or whether it's a union. And in both contexts, the ultimate sanction is the same, right? Somebody grouses about his pay too much, he could get fired. Somebody refuses to support a union that is negotiating about pay, he can lose his job. So it's really identical across the two situations.
Well, I would say
same subject matter, same sanction. What's the difference?
There's two differences. One, again, is the scale. When you're talking about a union collectively petitioning a school district or in the
But you're not objecting, I think, to the union as a whole. What you're objecting to is an individual employee having to support that activity. The scale is no different. It's an individual employee.
Yes, it's an individual employee being forced to support that expressive activity. So the question becomes, what expressive activity are they being forced to support? And when you're speaking of changing an entire government program, for example, Medicaid rates across the board, that is a matter of public concern. That is a matter of lobbying or political.
But that's exactly what the individual employee in Justice Scalia's hypothetical is arguing for. He wants wage rates to be changed across the board. He knows they're not going to be changed just for him. He wants higher wage rates.
But again, under this Court's private under public concern test, an individual, simply speaking, that usually does not rise to a matter of public concern.
Well, Mr. Messenger, I'm confused by this whole line of argumentation. I didn't think there was any issue in this case about the right of the plaintiffs or any of the other affected workers to say whatever they want on their own. That they're not prohibited from doing that, are they?
So no,
there
not.
Isn't any issue about that in the case. I thought the issue, and they could try to meet with anybody they want as many times as they want. I suppose that person has a perfect right to say, enough is enough, I don't want to meet with you for the fifth time or for the first time. But I thought the issue was whether they could be required to pay for somebody else to go and speak and possibly say things that they disagree with.
Yes, exactly, that they're being forced to support an organization here, the SEIU, to speak or petition the state over its Medicaid rate. So the distinction is, just you say —
So let's break this down. You're not arguing that there's something wrong with a union qua union. Is there anything wrong with the state saying, we're not going to negotiate with any employee who's not a member of the union?
Yes, Your Honor, there is not a problem with that because
right. Is there a problem for the state to say the union to organize has a certain amount of costs? So putting aside fair representation laws, could the state say, this is what we're going to pay police officers, $100, but we're going to pay union members $110 to reimburse them for the cost of negotiation? Would that be okay?
Yes. Under Knight, the state can choose who it bargains with, and if it chooses to set different rates for union and non-union, it could, as you said, notwithstanding duty of fair representation.
So there's no problem here with the representation. Your problem is with the fair share.
Yes, the forcing the individuals to support the union for the purpose of petitioning the state over here the Medicaid rates for home care.
Are there any — you suggest in response to
my colleague's question, that they could, the state could pay health care providers different rates. Are there any limitations? We're talking about Medicaid reimbursement. Are there any limitations that would prevent differential rates of pay reimbursement under Medicaid for the same services?
There may be statutory. I know that most Medicaid programs are across the board set rates. But also constitutionally, if there was a differential after a degree, it could be considered a penalty for the individual exercising their rights. But as far as I know, most Medicaid programs, in particular the one here, it's always been a fixed rate established across the board.
Mr. Messenger, just to clarify, what was the purpose of my earlier line of questioning? It was simply to show that if you have a case, it doesn't rest on the right to petition the government for redress of grievances. It rests on the First Amendment. You say that there is being your people are being required to support speech that they don't agree with.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, that is, you know, that is an arguable position, but I don't think it's even arguable that the right to petition the government for redress of grievances is involved here.
It's the expression they're being forced to support, Your Honor. So the violation, as you say, is they're being forced to support expressive activity, and that expressive activity is
First Amendment violation, yes. not a denial of the right to petition the government.
Yes, Your Honor, they're not being denied the right to petition in the sense that the state is saying they cannot petition. Instead, they're being forced to support petitioning.
Mr. Messenger, I'm not sure that Justice Scalia's answer satisfies his own question.
What was the question?
Because here's the thing, that in the workplace, we've given the government a very wide degree of latitude. And there's much that the government can do. It can fire people. It can demote people for things that they say in the workplace, not for things that they say as a citizen, but for things that they say in the workplace. That's the fundamental lesson of Garcetti and of many, many others of our cases. So you're saying, well, the government can punish somebody for saying something, but the government in the exact same position cannot compel somebody to say something they disagree with. And I want to know what's the basis for that distinction, which it seems to me is just as hard as if you were answering under the petition clause.
Yeah, I want to hear the answer, too, because contrary to what Justice Kagan suggests, I didn't say your First Amendment argument was valid.
Good. I said, okay.
I said at least it was a comprehensible argument.
Jump in whenever you'd like.
Yeah.
The way in which home care providers petition the state, I submit, is not an internal proprietary matter that the government has free rein to manage. And so the distinction between government acting as proprietor, as you say, the government can tell an employee on work time that you can't engage in certain speech if it interferes with the workplace. But the way in which an individual associates with to lobby or petition the state is not an internal proprietary matter. So, for example, here the way in which Susan Watts and other home care providers petition the state is not internal workplace speech.
Why isn't it? I mean, it is for private employers. There are some private employers who think they're better off with a closed shop, and they just want to deal with one union, and they require all the people that they hire to become a member of this union and to pay union dues for representational purposes. They do this as private employers because they think it is in their interest as an employer. Why can't the government have the same interest?